For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
And welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. And sitting in today for Tim, my partner who is in Washington, D.C., the Swamp, as they affectionately call it. He's attending the ALEC annual legislative conference. And Paul Kirpin from the Paul Kirpin Show, Saturdays from 12 to 1 p.m., not noon to 12. Maybe that's in the upcoming future. I gave you three extra.
It's the shortest radio set. 12 to noon is the shortest radio show in the history of radio.
12 to noon. You can do it. If anybody can do it, Paul, you can do it. You know, hey, I want to talk about something local here for a second. And, you know, we always joke about, the Friday the 13th movies and where it seems that the monster never seems to die. It just comes back over and over and over. And I tell you, quick story. The Friday the 13th that I was done with is when I think it was Freddy Takes New York or something, or Jason Takes New York. But these people went to the graveyard where Jason was buried. They were trying to dig him up or something. Lightning hit a shovel. The shovel got electrified or whatever, and it reanimated Jason. And I was like, yep. This will be. This will be the last one that I watch. But speaking of things that never die, Better Together. Can you believe they are trying? Yes, haven't heard this. Oh, they are trying. They are trying to bring this back. Sam Page said yesterday that this is something that we should all look at. Mayor Jones said it again. When are these people going to learn, Paul, that we don't want city and county reunited?
See, they know this. They have learned. But the thing is St. Louis City, they need the resources of St. Louis County. And so they're trying to convince everybody in St. Louis County just how much better it would be if we were just all together. It's a con.
But
it's
how can they make that case when the city is getting the bulk of the Rams money? I think they're getting like $256 million of that $500 million.
What happens though to the tax base? Listen, St. Louis County has some good economic advantages that St. Louis City just doesn't have. So how is this good for St. Louis? I already said, look, it's going to allow St. Louis City to tap into St. Louis County, because this is really a one directional positive, right? St. Louis City is going to get some good stuff from St. Louis County, but what is St. Louis County going to get out of it?
See, here's how they sell it, Paul. They'll say, we have a lot of duplicate services now, so we can combine the ambulance services, we can combine the police services, we can combine the dog catcher services, and this will save the taxpayers millions of dollars. That's how they sell it. We have a duplication of services. Why don't we combine them for the good of the area?
So can I make the same case and say, well, then why doesn't St. Louis County combine with St. Charles County? Could we go that direction and just say, hey, let's better together to the west?
Well, but unfortunately, in that situation, you have St. Louis City and St. Louis County want to do this. I don't think St. Charles County or Franklin County or Warren County want anything to do with
we don't want to do it in Franklin County. Franklin County doesn't want anything to do with any of this.
Which, speaking of St. Louis City Alderman, I heard today, I think in 2022, that is the year now, isn't it? 2024, next year, one of these years, that they're going to cut the Board of Aldermen in half, from 28 to 14. Wards. Each ward will have 20,000 residents. Paul Stell, I think now a alderman gets paid about 20,000, maybe 22,000, 25,000. There's a plan now to increase that for the part-time job, of course, to $70,000 a year. Board of Aldermen worth $70,000, Paul?
Well, I guess they might be if they get rid of half the Board of Aldermen.
I was looking at that myself. I was like, well, maybe that's where the cost savings are. I don't know.
I wonder whose idea this was, right? Like, if this works, I'd like to see how these are written, because it's going to be written in a way that some people on the Board of Aldermen, they're going to be all for this plan, and the other half is going to be like, no. No, we don't like this plan. Let's rewrite this.
You can just talk about dysfunctional. But, Stell, I don't know if you know this offhand, but I know the city of Chicago, they're aldermen. I mean, they make six figures, don't they? I mean, that's a full-time job.
Yeah,
not
only is it full-time, but it's lifetime.
Yeah, basically.
In a lot of cases, yeah. And as you guys were discussing it, my first thought was, what do you expect from a democratically run metropolitan city? Yeah, I can see them trying to figure out some way to get a salary of 70 grand. And you're right, Chicago, the Democratic machine in Chicago is overloaded with aldermen that, not only do you wonder how they got the job, mm-hmm. we know how they got some of the jobs, but you scratch your head and you think these people don't belong in this position, but they get the gig. And it winds up being 20, 30, 40 years for a lot of them up there. So,
And what amazes me, now, could they make the case for this $70,000, Stelle and Paul, that these aldermen need that money? Because if it wasn't for that, then we wouldn't have Jeffrey Boyd and Colin Muhammad and all of these other guys taking payoffs because the pay is so low. So maybe that we need it to be 70 grand so we can have honest politicians.
It would probably be a much simpler process, and it would probably cause a lot less frustration for the Board of Aldermen if they could just find a way to raise all of their salaries without having to limit the board. But this is a way that probably sits better maybe with the people. I don't know. St. Louis City seems to do a lot of stuff that is just totally wrong to begin with, but they always find a way, you know, just to do it. So when's this going to happen?
The board. The board next year. That's a done deal. I think next year or 20. It's either next year or 2024. The board gets cut in half. Also, I forgot to mention this stipulation that if the raise does go into effect, the $70,000 a year, that takes a place with the reduced board, not with the current older people. So I guess that makes it more palatable, I guess.
Though. Well, let me just say that 70 grand, if you were going to do that in Chicago, it wouldn't make any difference because you still have under the table stuff going on all over the place in Chicago. That's the Democratic machine up there. And I think most folks would agree that that goes on here too. But I don't think the salary will eliminate any of the shenanigans. Yeah.
Probably not, because, you know, when this stuff came out with Colin Muhammad and the people that are involved with them, I was not shocked at all. Not that I'm privy to the corruption in St. Louis City government, but I was like, this is how it's probably done all the time.
Yeah.
These guys just so happened got caught, and the person they were dealing with was wearing a wire and was trying to get a reduced sentence, but... Yep. This happens all the time.
Happens all the time in Chicago. Because, yes, indeed.
Because they've given these aldermen, I mean, mm-hmm. if you want to do any type of development project in a ward in the city, you have to have the sign off of that person, which gives them a tremendous amount of power.
Yes.
Chris, probably about 5 or 6 years ago, I was doing a little bit of business consulting work mm-hmm. in the city. And there was a woman who was on the board of aldermen, and like she was basically running the whole show. Like she wasn't a developer. She didn't have any stake in it. She was running the whole show. And I've talked with state representatives when I was in the legislature mm-hmm. and the Democrats. They will tell you, they're like, yeah, it's kind of a fiefdom. Like when you get in here, like you have to hobnob and do the right things with the right people and know who to rub shoulders with. Yeah. And it's a real fiefdom. Like those aldermen and the Democrat political structure just really has a lot of control.
I mean, the St. Louis Democratic Party machine, it's not like Chicago or New York or some of the other Detroit or some of the other big cities, but there are still remnants of it there. And even though I think that Cori Bush is not particularly popular within the community, I think the reason that she was able to win her election is because that Democratic machine was still there. The apparatus of the Clay machine was still there, where they have a absentee ballot program to go out to the nursing homes and to other people. They have vans to get people to the poll, and then they get people to the graveyard. They have people that they pay. You know, Republicans don't do this, but Democrats will pay people to stand on a street somewhere holding a sign mm-hmm. All day to get publicity for their candidates. We don't do that, and that is part of that machine, and that's why she has won, even though I don't think she is particularly popular in the district. I really don't.
And let me just say, as a note of clarification, Lewis Reed was a neighbor of ours.
Oh, really?
In South City, yeah. And a very nice guy.
I was going to say, did you have any inkling he was corrupt?
Not really. No. But then again, coming from Chicago, I was on the lookout for it all the time. And whenever something would transpire, my first thought was, oh, yeah, this is typical of the Democratic machine in a major metro area. So, but he was a nice guy, good guy to get to know as a neighbor. But no, I didn't suspect that anything like that would happen.
You know, and I know we got some time left. We're going to have David Stokes from the Show Me Institute coming in today. Of course, we want to talk to him about this Better Together stuff and some of the other things that he is talking about. But I had a thought there and completely lost it. Let's change gears here and go to China, which. People are starting to follow that very closely. The zero COVID policy, which, you know, we saw it here when they were locking people down, where people were getting depressed, people were getting angry because they were locked up. That was only, you know, a relatively short period of time compared to China. Just imagine being locked up in your home for 2 years. Paul, do you think these demonstrations are sustainable, or do you think that once they kind of ease up, the Chinese will go back into the way they were?
Yeah, that's what I think is going to happen. I think eventually it'll ease up. But I tell you what, if they keep doing what they're doing now, and if that we often forget exactly how many people live in China.
Yeah,
and so like the demonstrations that we're seeing, these the police coming in and just manhandling some of these protesters, I don't even really know how much of the population that is. Even if it's a million people, that's nothing compared to the actual size of China. I think what's more likely to happen is eventually all of this goes away. And it will go away, especially with China. I mean, they're notorious for being completely brutal, right? So we'll see these protests go so far, and then eventually it'll stop if history is any indication of what's likely to happen.
Now, there is one difference, and I mentioned this yesterday, between these demonstrations and what happened in Tiananmen Square. Tiananmen Square was one place. I mean, that was one area. Where is that? Shanghai, wherever that, where Tiananmen Square is. These demonstrations are occurring all over the country, and I think that will make it a little, you know, they have complete power. But I think the fact that these are happening around the country will make it a little harder to tamp down. And social media.
Social media.
Yep. In 1989.
And in China right now, their social media is not what we have here.
Right.
But they still have it. There's still ways for them to communicate. They do still have social media. Yeah. It's just not as free to them as it is to us.
And I like the way that they are protesting. They are holding up blank sheets of paper.
White paper revolution.
Yeah, that is their protest.
You know, I love it. How do you censor that?
Yeah, exactly. Here, censor this.
I think it's interesting that Apple has eliminated AirDrop for folks to actually exchange photos and videos, etc. That somehow they've stopped.
Is the government? Do you think the government is? Made them stop that?
Probably. Could very well be. But that was one of the focal points of folks being able to get together and AirDrop stuff. You're able to avoid all of the governmental restrictions that are there. And now all of a sudden, I believe as of yesterday, AirDrop's not available.
Mm. I just would, you know, we live in a very safe country. We have freedoms. We don't really know what it's like to wonder if the police are going to come down and knock down your door or some neighbor is, you know, telling on you or something. But man, just think of the courage that these people have to do this. I mean, this is not like us here. Okay, we might spend a day in jail or something. I mean, these people, you could do a protest like this and no one sees you again.
Yes.
Yeah, or you wake up the next morning with your kidneys gone.
Yeah, exactly. They do harvest. Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
China, so in the legislature, you ever heard of Gaolin Fong?
Yes.
Yeah, so we passed for a state to do this, you know, we had passed resolutions condemning China. We did this from Jefferson City. Condemning China for their persecution of people that practice Gaolin Fong, which is not a religion. Yeah. It's just a meditation.
They're just exercising.
It's a meditation practice, right? But we had a guy testify in our committee. Him and his wife were kidnapped out of their own homes put in prison camps, and they put him in prison cells near each other. And he listened in while his wife was being beat to death. Wow. And he managed to escape and came to the U.S. But this is the country that we're talking about. This is what China's doing. And this is the kind of government that they are. So for them to be able to stand up and protest and to be as creative and insightful to hold up a white sheet of paper, you know, to that would really roil those Chinese censors, you know, and the people that are trying to lock everybody down. I think that these Chinese people probably have a much deeper appreciation for what freedom actually is than most Americans do at this point.
I remember, and Stell, you remember too, that during the Tiananmen Square demonstrations, they had made a mock Statue of Liberty.
Yes.
In Tiananmen Square. Right. So they definitely understand it. It's going to be a interesting situation because there's also criticism that, President Biden is not being as harsh as he could be because he doesn't want to offend the Chinese leaders and he doesn't want the Chinese getting involved in the Russian-Ukraine war. So he is kind of being tepid in his response to these
tepid. But go ahead,
When we come back, guys, we're going to have David Stokes from the Show Me Institute. We'll talk to him about Better Together and some of the other things going on. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL. Welcome home.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
And welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. It's 4:30 on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon, but it is the calm before the storm. According to the weather forecasters, the weather is about to drop dramatically. So I told my wife, please put the electric blanket on the bed tonight. So I will be warm tonight. And we also have a hot guest.
What?
That's Dave. He's hot.
Yeah.
Dave's hot.
He's so hot that, yes.
Very talking. Yep. They think he's a righteous dude.
David Stokes over at the Show Me Institute.
In high school, you talk about spike. I had a very short spike.
I knew there was some spike somewhere in there doing some spike stuff.
It wasn't very punky. It was more Leave It to Beaver-ish, maybe.
I think calling Dave hot threw everybody off. I apologize for that. Dave, how are you?
I'm just used to it.
Okay, great. So how was your Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving was great.
Great.
Yours as well?
It was great. Of course, David Stokes is the Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. And Dave, I don't know if you were able to listen to the show earlier, but we talked about Better Together. We thought that the state was driven through its heart. It's dead, at least for a few years, and now it seems, according to the Post Disgrace, it's making a comeback. Please tell me it's not.
Well, as somebody who agreed with parts of Better Together and then watched it implode, as it did implode, you know, Tim and I had a lot of good talks about it. Look, St. Louis County and St. Louis City need to do things differently, but the people of both the city and the county made it abundantly clear that what Better Together proposed, which went way too far in the things it was proposing, that there was strong opposition to the almost all of that. Mm-hmm. So let's see what the city and the county, because the article had a big headline like Better Together coming back, and then you read in the details and it's like they're just considering making reappointments to the Board of Freeholders. So there wasn't a lot of strong evidence of what's happening there. I do think there are ways that the city and the county, and certainly the many cities within St. Louis County, can work better together.
Yeah.
Required merges and dramatic changes to local government that were sort of a top-down mandate. That wasn't the way to do it 3-4 years ago. It's not going to be the way to do it next year or the year after. People don't want that. You need a system that encourages voluntary changes, service. I'm a big fan of service sharing. I'm a big fan of the municipalities in our region and the county voluntarily stepping forward and contracting with each other so that like a large city provides the police services to the neighboring small cities. I'm a big fan of things like the North County Police Cooperative, where about 20 or so cities have sort of merged their police departments into one larger organization. Those are the things I want to do a lot more of. And if The city and the county can get the freeholders and come up with, you know, sort of modest but smart and in most cases voluntary changes to city and county government. I think that'd be wonderful. I think they would have learned the lesson that going too far and mandating significant changes, that nobody wants that.
I think Paul pointed out the concerns that many people have is that this is basically will be a wealth transfer from St. Louis County to St. Louis City. Paul, you want to elaborate on that?
Well, I just, when I think of the difference between St. Louis City and St. Louis County, you see a lot more wealth creation in St. Louis County than you do in St. Louis. You see people fleeing St. Louis City to get to St. Louis County. And so it looks to me like this is a one-sided relationship where St. Louis City has far more to benefit than St. Louis County does.
Well, back to the Better Together discussion, going back 3 or 4 years, that was stated, something like that was stated a lot. Other people, and you didn't use these terms, so I'm not saying you were saying this, Paul, but other people were saying it would be a bailout for St. Louis City and concerned about like pension issues and the like. And I always thought that was significantly overstated. Like if St. Louis City rejoined St. Louis County, nobody's talking about, I don't think anybody now would be talking about St. Louis City and the county merging into one. That's never going to happen. But if St. Louis City were to rejoin as just one more municipality in St. Louis County, you know, the county's not going to take over its pension fund. The county doesn't run the pension. Large cities in St. Louis County have their own pension funds. Mm-hmm. And then the smaller ones are in the state fund for local government, loggers. So the county's not going to be required or even want to bail out the city on that issue. As for things like policing and fire, you would hope that some cost savings could be found there. The problem is that, and having covered municipality for a long time, it's always the same thing, that the best policies, I mean, you try to merge things, the cost save, politics always kills the policy. Like, you find cost savings by, you know, reducing the number of government employees, you know, service, you find cost savings here and there, and then in the end, the politicians aren't willing to lay anybody off, so there aren't actually any cost savings, because they're not willing, the elected officials too often, and I'm not just talking about St. Louis, I'm talking about, this is sort of the national evidence for these things, is that because the elected officials don't have the willingness to make the tough choices and actually do what actually needs to be done to get cost savings, you rarely have them.
Well, what about with roads, for example, or maintenance and infrastructure? Who winds up paying for that in St. Louis City if St. Louis City just becomes part of the county? I mean, wouldn't St. Louis County then have to move into St. Louis City and also begin to take care of a lot of their infrastructure needs?
No, actually.
Okay.
Like, there are, in St. Louis County right now, there are a lot of local roads where various cities control their roads. There's a few private subdivision roads. And then St. Louis County and the unincorporated area has their roads. And then there's the arterial road system where St. Louis County manages the major, not the interstate highways, of course, that's under MoDOT, and there's certain state highways as well. But there's a number of major arterial roads. So yes, I would imagine that certain major St. Louis City arterial roads that connect in with county arterial roads, things like, Chodo or Chippewa, major roads that connect in the Forest Park Parkway. Some of those might be added to the county arterial road system in such a scenario. But I wouldn't think that a lot of them would have to be that way.
So it seems like if there's not really a huge benefit or a huge cost, then why do it at all?
Because it's cool.
Why do it at all is a good it's a very good question. Because there is some redundancy in St. Louis City, having its own county offices, having a county assessor and a city assessor, a county recorder and a city recorder. So there's some redundancy there. Mm-hmm. There are potential cost savings there. As I said a few minutes ago, there's only cost savings if you're willing to combine the offices and then actually let people go. Mm-hmm. Because you've combined two assessor's offices into one, and now you can let go a quarter of the employees. But if you're not willing to do that, then right now, what is the point?
Yeah.
Same with, the sheriff's departments in the two. The court system, and that's a slightly separate thing because judicial circuits are different from city-county boundaries, but that's a good example of it. And you find that in other Nashville and Davidson County, Louisville and that county, Indianapolis and Marion County. I wish I could remember the name of Louisville's county. Some of the cities and counties that have had things like this, that there are successes and there are cost savings, but also another issue is that if in point A, the employees in one department make 40,000 and in place B, they make 45, you know, they always bring everybody up to 45. And then if it's reversed in a different department where the first city they make more and in the county they make less, they always bring it up to the city. Like everybody always gets brought up to the highest and best benefits and salary. And the cost savings, that's why the cost savings get substantially less than otherwise they could be. That's one of the reasons.
Dave, let me get this question. I don't want to turn you into the spokesman for the city-county merger, so I have one more question about that. And it's a political question because I'm a political animal. But one of the criticisms that people have of the city-county merger or bringing St. Louis City into the county as an additional municipality is that if you have that, you will never have a Republican run the St. Louis City or St. Louis County Council again because it will be stacked with Democrats if you bring the city in.
Well, I think that's probably a fact. I mean, that's how it would happen. You would bring in 300,000 heavily.
So why do Republicans want to do that?
Well, I try not to do.
I know you're not partisan.
I try very hard not to do public policy from a partisan outcome. You know, you could have Democrats doing great things, sure, and you could have Republicans doing terrible things. The city of Chesterfield, most of those elected officials they're nonpartisan, but they would, I think, mostly consider themselves Republican. Outside of that, you know, they just passed a terrible, terrible TIF with the atrocious public policy with the assistance of Sam Page's appointees on the TIF commission, which is also awful. Mm-hmm. So, look, Republicans can do plenty of bad things in local government, too. And look, we see Tashara Jones pushing back against the Firemen's Union right now in the city of St. Louis, a good thing that she's doing in the city of St. Louis. Now, we've got plenty of disagreements with what she does as well. So, yes, what you just said politically would be
That's my main reason why I'm against it.
Well, you could adjust that from a political, from a structural perspective, you would almost certainly have to expand the county council somewhat, which would not be difficult. It's just a charter vote.
Mm-hmm.
So you can adjust that, but would it be a Democrat majority on the council for a long, long time? We worked at St. Louis County the last time it had a Republican majority on the council.
Look, if bringing St. Louis City in as a municipality for St. Louis County is the equivalent of making D.C. and Puerto Rico states. They will be four permanent Democratic senators.
I'm just going to say that I adamantly support Puerto Rican statehood. I do. First of all, I'm going to disagree with you politically.
I allow you to do that.
The delegate, I don't believe it's called a delegate. I believe it's a delegate from D.C. and Virgin Islands, but I believe that the term for the Puerto Rican representative is different. But because I don't remember what that term is, we'll call it a delegate. But I believe it's that person is affiliated with the Republican Party, and I believe they have a history of recent governors and delegates in Puerto Rico who are there's different parties in Puerto Rico, so they were called slightly different names. One is affiliated with the Democrat Party, one with the Republican Party. But you can have, that is a two-party system in Puerto Rico.
Okay, well, I will remove Puerto Rico from my analogy, and I will say that St. Louis City entering St. Louis County is the equivalent of giving Washington, D.C. statehood, and there's two permanent Democratic senators.
Well, that's probably an accurate comparison. I don't think it automatically means that they shouldn't happen, but it's a fair comparison nonetheless.
But we got off the rails today. When did the Missouri Show Me Institute start talking about Puerto Rico statehood?
When you guys started asking me about it on the show.
Dave, anything you want to promote in our final minutes?
Well, we have, you know, we've a lot of other things we wanted to talk about that we can discuss. And that's the great part about being a regular weekly guest. We can just kick it to next week. Mm-hmm. But county budget issues, a campaign pressure to tighten up county pool regulations after a recent tragedy. There's a number of things in the news worth discussing. and talking about. And also but Chomi Asu does have Thursday at the World Chess Hall of Fame. We're bringing in, Tony, his last name. I don't have the thing in front of me. We're bringing in Tony from the State Policy Network to talk about his book, The Red versus Blue Divide, and the real dangers to division in America.
And they can find out that person's name on which
Tony
website.
Tony Woodleaf. Okay. I'm glad it came to me. I had a brain cramp. ShowMeInstitute.org. The event is Thursday. Starts at 5:30. With cocktails. And it's free. It says $15 on the thing, but now it's free to all if you want to come.
And that was David Stokes, Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. David, thank you for putting up with us like you do every day.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Stell.
And when we come back, we will have Chris's Corner. And Chris's Corner is the theme is hiding in plain sight. So we'll talk about that on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL. Welcome home.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
And welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show with Paul Kirkman from the Paul Kirkman Show, noon to 1 o'clock every Saturday afternoon, sitting in with us today. And as I alluded to before we went to break, today's Chris's Corner is called Hiding in Plain Sight. And it has to do with this scandal that we're seeing with this Balancingia, or whatever it is, the children that are being highly sexualized. We're going to talk about that a little bit in Chris's Corner.
Chris.
The whole thing is a joke.
Good God, we got to do something here, people.
It's not personal. It's strictly business.
My favorite black leader of all time is Frederick Douglass, who asked after emancipation, well, we just freed the blacks, now what are we going to do with them? His answer was, leave us alone.
And if you don't know, now you know.
And now, Chris's Corner.
You know, one of my all-time favorite television shows was the groundbreaking show Breaking Bad. I was new to the party, Breaking Bad. I had never heard of the show until they started promoting its last season. And out of curiosity, I binge-watched it one night, and I literally stayed up till about 5 o'clock in the morning. I watched about 5 or 6 episodes in a row. What a fantastic show. And I tell you, there was one particular line within Breaking Bad that really, really stuck with me. And that line was hiding in plain sight. If you remember, Walter White was a high school chemistry teacher, kind of a guy that everybody kind of kicked around, never got a break in life. He is diagnosed with cancer, and he knows that he doesn't have enough money saved for his family, and so because he has a degree and experience in chemistry, he becomes a meth maker, and he becomes one of the top meth makers in the country. And you know, if you look at that, Walter White was hiding in plain sight. Who would have ever known that an ordinary high school unassuming chemistry teacher was a huge drug dealer? Fast forward a little later in the series, one of his big connections to get him to the next level of the drug business was a gentleman named Gus. I forgot Gus's last name.
Frame.
Gus Frame. But Gus owned a chicken franchise restaurants in New Mexico, and he was the manager, and he was very unassuming. But we later found out that Gus Frame was probably one of the biggest drug dealers in New Mexico, and he's the one that said the line, hiding in plain sight. Another example of hiding in plain sight, a similar show that I liked, was Ozarks. You look at Marty Bird. Marty Bird drove a 1980s Cutlass Supreme. He didn't live fabulously or expansively. He just seemed to fit in, and it was just part of the crowd. The reason why I bring all this up and the way that it connects to this scandal, and I don't know how to pronounce the company, but it's a magazine that has been involved in some controversy because their advertisements seem to suggest the sexualization of children. I've seen one of the ads. It has a child holding a whip and some other sexual toy. Of course, they have been widely condemned about this. But, you know, think about it. Are these people just hiding in plain sight and telling us who they are? And I'll tell you why I say that. I was listening to a clip from The View, and Sunny Hostin, this was her take on this whole incident. She said that this was bad that Balenciaga did this because, you know, there are already people that are against the LGBT community and drag queens and all of that. And the term groomer is thrown around now. And so that is supposed to be disparaging. And she was mad at Balenciaga because doing this magazine hurts the LGBT community and adds to stereotypes. Nothing about there was less concern about the children being sexualized. And that made me think, you know what? These people are hiding in plain sight. They're not trying to hide who they are. What they did was so outrageous, sexualizing children, that nobody would ever really think about that there's underlying things dealing with this, which I believe, and I said yesterday, is demonic. I think that these kids wanting to change their sex and their parents agreeing with it and doing it is demonic. I think having drag queens teach kindergartners and preschoolers how to read is demonic. And the fact that these people don't have any discernment at all to see that this is not right, it amazes me. I think it's one of those things where it's so open that it's so out there that you really couldn't believe that this is something that they advocate for. And so, you know, I don't get surprised when I see these things anymore. They're just showing us who they are. In the immortal words of Gus Fring, they are hiding in plain sight. And I would love for us to gather and have more discernment to be able to see these people and stop this exploitation. And that is Chris's Corner. Have you been following this, Paul? This
yes.
Balenciaga thing? You know what? I have not been following it as closely as I could, not because it doesn't interest me. It's just so disgusting that I don't want to read it and really know all the details.
It is really, really dark. I don't know if you've seen some of these pictures from this photo shoot where it shows these kids and this.
I've seen one picture.
Have you seen this? There's one photo where it shows what looks like yellow and black caution tape, mm-hmm. except it says Balenciaga. But when you look at it, Balenciaga, rather than being spelled Balenciaga, it's Balenciaga.
Wow. I heard that. Somebody mentioned that.
You want to talk about hiding in plain sight? Here they are, you know, putting right into their own ads, these ancient Canaanite gods that the ancient Canaanites literally, they would put their live babies yes. onto this altar and roll it down into this altar, and their babies would burn up while they're alive. And that's what Balenciaga is promoting inside their own ads by spelling their name B-A-A-L, Bale.
And you know that's no accident.
It's on purpose.
And that no one will say anything about that or don't have the discernment to see how dangerous and demonic these people are is just amazing to me. You know, I saw this, I can't remember the group. It was a song that I liked. It came out maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and it was from a British artist, and he was half Pakistani and he was half British. That's the only thing that I knew about him, but it was a really good song. And there were so many demonic, dark images within that video. I mean, I just so happened to stop the video in a particular place. And Paul, you could see literally in the background was like this devil, and you could see the horns and stuff. And it was just, it did all the things that you see in the music industry, the whole one eye being covered. That's extensive throughout the music industry, is having one, they'll either cover up their eye, or the way that the photography is, that they'll be shaded on one side of their face to show one eye. I've even seen them be kind of more hiding a little bit, where there's an artist called Maxwell, one of his albums. They show him profile so that you just see the one eye. But I have looked up on Google of artists showing their one eye. It's tons of them.
You know, people might be listening to this and they might be saying, oh, this all just sounds too fantastic, you know, almost conspiracy minded. But think about this, folks. No matter what you think about this, most people that I know, whether they're Christians, whether they're atheists, it does not matter. Most people that I know that I've talked to about this are creeped out by things like Ouija boards, right? They're creeped out by things of this dark spiritual nature, things that we don't know much about, but are just really troubling and just overall dark.
Yeah.
So what you see with these Balenciaga. What you see with these ads is outright in your face spiritual darkness, where they're invoking and using in their ads the same imagery. Like you just said, this kind of stuff does not happen by accident, because somebody had to actually order or make this caution tape, and they had to spell Balenciaga. So that way it also has the name Baal in it too. Stuff doesn't happen by accident. So there are dark forces among us, spiritually speaking, and some people really attach themselves to it and try to find a way to get it inside our lives too.
Yeah. And I know we're going to break here, but that's what scares me. We can talk about this when we come back. That's what scares me about virtual reality. I mean, we'll talk about that. And you're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Sarp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL. Welcome home.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.